going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Tuesday, February 21st, 2017. And I'm going to start by opening a public hearing on HJR 6 and invite up Representative Wilson.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJR 6 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to increase the number of senators serving in legislature to 36 by aligning state senate districts with Oregon's 36 county boundaries. It refers a proposed amendment to voters at next regularly scheduled general election.
Thank you. Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Carl Wilson, State Representative, House District 3, including Grants Pass, Cave Junction, and surroundings. Let me begin, first of all, by saying that we have a building full of wonderful people here. And how can I tell you that? I've had so many people over the last week or so come to me and say, and many of them under the cover of darkness, saying, do you know your bill has a constitutional problem? And I say, oh, no, really? Oh, you got to be kidding me. And I know it does, and Madam Chair, you know it does. But in spite of that, I want to thank you for scheduling it. Because if nothing else, this is a citizen appearing before government for redress. This is all about the urban-rural divide that you hear so much about, and it's about nothing more than that. I do wish to thank the chair for scheduling this bill. You may even think this is a quixotic endeavor, but thank you once again for your time today. I do appreciate it. There's a growing chorus of people, Americans, who object to merely discussing ideas that they don't like. I've learned a lot about that lately. I'm thankful there are still those in this process, in the legislative process especially, who are willing to hear challenging bills like this, challenging ideas that perhaps embody the heart and soul of people who do not live in the populous parts of this state. As legislation conceived in this building reinforces the urban-rural divide, we've created not one Oregon, but we have created many Oregons along the way. It's little wonder, then, that rural citizens feel greatly underrepresented here and highly estranged from this city. As you know, the State of Jefferson movement sprang from such feelings. Ideas like HJR 6, arise in an attempt to resolve that estrangement, to bring the voice of the hinterlands here to the Capitol halls and invest them in decisions made concerning the future of our state. This resolution somewhat mimics the federal model with popular representation in the House and the states represented by two Senate seats, regardless of the state's population. I find it a great model, a wonderful model that came from our founders, giving North Dakota two senators, California, two senators, two for Wyoming, two for New York State. And for the purposes of HJR 6, Oregon state representatives would still be assigned by population. And each state Senate district would encompass an entire county, 36 total. Thus, the senator from Wheeler County, population of 1,358 persons, would have an equal voice with a senator from Multnomah County, approximately 790,000 people. Sherman County, population 1,680 people, would have the same Senate voting strength as Lane County, population 362,000. So why the county level, you might ask? The counties of Oregon, some of them founded prior to statehood, perform many of the public services that we have deemed essential. The county is where statute, law, and rule meet enforcement, where the programs we fund meet their recipients, where expectations meet reality, where the rubber meets the road. There are administrative tasks that they have in common, but diverse in their geographies and economic circumstances. They've tended to become more distinct through time. And we in the legislature are complicit in this process. We have passed laws that apply inconsistently across the state. Think about minimum wage. Think about speed limits. Think about self-serve fuel and availability of marijuana. Even differences between neighboring counties. My county, Josephine, has some things in common with Jackson, but it's a different world there. You'd have a hard time saying that Grants Pass and Ashland are much alike at all. Legislative counsel has made me aware of no less than four separate amendments to our constitutionally described manner of setting legislative districts would be required to see this motion through. And the legal challenge to such a maneuver, well, you could probably write that off as a waste of time. Elsie has also reminded me of the Warren Court's opinion on this matter. I'm aware of our nation's robust history of subsequent courts reinterpreting such decisions. Besides, if we permit judicial precedent to utterly curb innovation in the legislative branch, we have certainly misunderstood the purpose of tripartite system of governance that we enjoy and is outlined so elegantly in our country's constitution. Suffering lack of regard at the legislative level through cumbersome ideas that this may be, this idea may find a home in the initiative process. It's hard to say, but why do we persist in efforts like this in spite of the hurdles that we have? And I believe the answer is for the sake of advocating for fairness, for the sake of parity among our urban and rural counterparts, for the idea of one Oregon with all her disparate regions invested firmly in her future and her well-being. HJR 6 really is a favorite bill of mine. I've been approached by a number of constituents over the last year who have expressed interest in such a bill and have offered ideas about it. And again, I think that I offer nothing radical whatsoever here. I'm just saying, why can't we consider the federal model that our forefathers put into action, something that still serves us well after 200 years of its inception? We have to remember the Compromise of 1787 was about this very thing, and that is, in the Constitutional Convention, the Compromise came forth because it was realized that unless we did something to protect the small states from the large states, bad things would happen. They envisioned a lower chamber, of course, still by election, popular election, and certainly by population. But when it came to the Senate side, they deemed that it was highly important to undertake the idea that you needed to have a small state with just as much Senate representation as a large state. And again, it's the federal system that we live by yet today, and it works. So again, I realize that maybe tilting windmills here, but nonetheless, on behalf of my constituents and thousands in the East, thousands in the South and the Southwest and the South Coast, there are many people who believe that this kind of representation is truly fair and in great contrast to what we see today with a very population-centric legislature doing things that in many cases harm us severely in rural Oregon. And we don't seem to have satiated our appetite for doing that here. So thank you for hearing me. Again, I appreciate your time. I know it's valuable. And Madam Chair, again, to you, thank you. You and I both know the problems with this, but yet you're willing to let thousands of constituents in the South, through me, make this request before you. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? Yeah, Representative Rayfield.
Representative Wilson, I was just curious. I mean, you talk about making the request. Are you asking the committee to move forward and pass the measure? Or, I mean, I guess, kind of curious what the thought process, or is it just a public discussion of the matter?
Representative Williamson and Vice Chair Rayfield, yes, in my happiest dream, you would consider it and pass it along. Perhaps not my happiest dream, but one of them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Right, with that, I will call up Rebecca Gladstone, John Wood, and Les Poole. Go in whatever order you would like. Just remember to say your name for the record. Thank you.
Sorry, what?
Oh, I said you can go in whichever order you would like. Just be sure to say your name for the record.
Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Rebecca Gladstone, League of Women Voters of Oregon. Chair Williamson, committee, thank you for accepting our testimony. This House joint resolution proposes alteration of our Oregon Constitution with regards to voting apportionment. Our position on this is specific and clear. the Oregon Constitution should provide for a legislative assembly that is apportioned on a population basis under a system that provides flexibility, adequate safeguards, and enforcement procedures, ensuring reapportionment after every federal census. This resolution would apply a dramatic voting representation imbalance in our legislature. We strongly urge a no vote. And anecdotally speaking on my own behalf, I would like to add that the one, hello?
Mm-hmm. Ah, we can hear
one
you.
Person, one vote principle was passed by the Supreme Court in 1964. I think I remember hearing that one of our county's populations has diminished to the point where they wouldn't achieve the threshold for establishment of a county today. I'm not putting a judgment on that, but I do advocate on behalf of the League a no vote on this measure. Thank you.
My name is John Woods, and I'm from Beaverton. And the reason I'm speaking for the rural people is because I was looking, I was looking at the maps that Oregon has. Now, we came from New York, and when we came from New York, there was a Senate with two senators, one senator per county, and the House of Representatives was population weighted. This gave us a fantastic legislative body. Everybody thinks New York is liberal, but the thing about it is, yeah, the Democrats outnumbered the Republicans, but there was always a real good discussion and real good bills coming out of there. I looked at, I went through and I ran the numbers on some of the counties, and out in Eastern Oregon, some of these legislative districts have five counties in them. If you take and you run the numbers and everything else, that comes down to less than 1% representation in the Senate, Oregon Senate. That's not right. But if you go through and you look at the Portland corridor, the Beaverton corridor, and everything else, that's 16.6% of the representation of one county because of how many districts are in there. So basically, you're closing out all of the people out in Eastern Oregon by just the way it's structured. The reason I came here is a lot of these people seem to think that this is going to continue to go on. The three percenters and a bunch of other groups are gaining traction out in Eastern Oregon. And all I'm coming here to say is you're either going to change it equitably, easily, or some of these people are just going to up and decide as a county to leave. And that's where we're at. And that's what's going to happen. I can guarantee it. I hear the talk. I see the post. I see everything that's going on out there. What I don't understand for the life of me is, like, coming from New York, I cross the street and I go over into that park. I see plaques of each one of those counties. I cross over here. I don't see anything about counties at all. But yet if I go and I talk to somebody and I say, where do you live? It's Marion County or Linn County or Washington County or whatever. And I see that the counties are legal entities with a governing body that supposedly the state is identifying. So I'd say that they have a right, if they decide to get together, they'll just leave. They'll decide to go out to Idaho or Montana or make their own state. We have a chance here to actually change that dynamic. These people feel underrepresented. They don't feel represented at all. You talk to them, and they're mad, they're angry, and you've got this thing between the urban and the rural people that is just a fight. I have never seen anything like this, even in New York, where, you know, like I said, they work together. Yeah, they have fist fights and everything else, but doggone it, they come to a resolution and they work on their bills and they work on these bills and they do an agreement. So I suggest that we do something, some way to make it equitable for those people out there.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Les Poole. I live in Clackamas County. And I think back to being a 14-year-old. I had a high school project. And I decided that I would study how the county's boundaries and how the state boundary of Oregon was formed. My email address is elpee5440@gmail.com. And, of course, the 5440 is about Oregon history. In that process, I got about a third of the way through it, and I realized I would never get 36 counties' boundaries figured out. But I learned a lot, and I decided to concentrate on the Oregon Trail and on Wasco County, which was originally half of Oregon. And in the process, I started to realize why the way things are established in Oregon need to be considered a little differently. And what brought me to that conclusion is probably the same that brought so many people to that conclusion. And the underlying issue is the divide, as Mr. Woods just said. The underlying issue is appropriate representation from all facets, all areas of the state. And while we've got a Senate, when you look at the House and you look at how things operate, you find that there's a domination from the western side where I live. Well, I have friends and family and a lot of connections in eastern Oregon, and I'm fortunate enough to talk and deal and work with hundreds of people. So I would say that This resolution I support, and the reason I support it is that it's going to invite a conversation that we desperately need to have. Right now we have 30 senators, there's 36 counties, and while I haven't gone to the point of analyzing exactly what the cost and how that would lay out, the message that Mr. Wilson is presented, I called him Mr. Wilson. That was Dennis's father, and Dennis the Menace. I meant to say Representative Wilson. The message is real simple. And how does that equity, how does that, I hate to use the buzzword fairness, come about in the future? Because the disconnect is strong. And, you know, eliminating the Rural Communities Committee, focusing on so many issues that maybe are about a specific part of the state or a specific aspect leaves these folks out. And I think this is something that should be endorsed. And I think it's a conversation that isn't going to end regardless of any decision you make about this resolution. And, of course, the last thing I'd mention is reapportionment's coming soon, and I don't know if reapportionment, how much effect that will have on the situation, but I look and I say to myself, what are we going to do to bring economic vitality and opportunities to the rest of the state? And without more weight in their voices, they won't be heard. And there's only so much that Bend or Prineville or a few hubs can do while the rest of the communities falter. So I would recommend moving this forward, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? All right, thank you. With that, I will close the public hearing on HJR 6, and I will open a public hearing on HJR 10.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJR 10 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to vest power and impeachment of statewide elected executive branch officials in House of Representatives and power to impeach in the Senate.
Representative Hack.
Hi. I guess I could have stayed over there, but that kind of felt odd. Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Rayfield, and Vice Chair McLean, members of the committee, thank you. State Representative Jody Hack, I represent South Salem, Almsville, and Turner. And I have the pleasure of bringing to you HJR 10. Definitely upon the request of many Oregonians, not just those in my district, but many across our state, probably many of whom are in your districts. As you well know, Oregon is the only state left in the union who does not have the power to impeach its executive branch of elected officials. And what the measure does is it proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to vest power of impeachment of statewide elected executive branch officials in House of Representatives and power to try impeachment in the Senate. It requires a 3/5 majority vote of the House of Representatives to deliver impeachment resolution to the Senate with a 2/3 majority vote of the Senate for conviction. It limits judgment to removal from office and disqualification from holding other public office. Refers proposed amendments to the people for approval or rejection at the next regular general election held throughout the state. I brought this resolution to this very committee in 2015, which passed out of committee without one amendment. We worked pretty diligently with some constitutional law lawyers, some retired Supreme Court justices, and put together what we deemed to be a pretty darn good set of criteria. And it passed off of the House floor to unfortunately die on the Senate side. So I'm back again at the request of many Oregonians. And I think it's time that we do the right thing in this body and we give the voters of Oregon the opportunity to decide whether or not they want the opportunity to impeach their elected officials in the executive branch. This, again, is not a weapon. It's merely a tool. We were very thoughtful in the process of how we put this together for that very reason, which is why you see the 2/3 and the 3/5. So I would ask that you move this through this committee and send it to the House floor. And hopefully this time we will see it move on the Senate side so that we can give Oregonians the opportunity to have a voice and to be heard and to decide whether or not they choose to have this impeachment process here in Oregon. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Nose.
Madam Chair, is there going to be other witnesses or presenters? I remember this from my first term. I'm trying to remember if there are standards for impeachment or if the discussion we had last time was it's ultimately a political process, and so it's up to the body to decide whether it's going to go that route or not, and a sort of standard or baseline that we would have to meet does not matter because it's an ultimate political process.
I want to address that?
I can try. Thank you, Chair Williamson. Representative Nose, and when we could have Ledge Council come in and talk, I think they spoke to that last time.
I feel like Dexter did too.
And he did. And that is exactly why the parameters are put on and you have the 2/3 and the 3/5. It goes out, my understanding is it goes out of the House side to the Senate for hearings and then has to be voted out of the Senate side. So there were many safeguards put into the resolution to keep it from being a partisan issue. And we felt like we had adequately done that. I know that Vice Chair Rayfield had some questions too, and we were able to answer those. I have met with the governor. She has no changes that she'd like to make. We went over those. She's fine with it. Our Secretary of State is fine with it. So I've done due diligence in asking those who serve in those positions if they had any issues, and they do not.
No questions. That's sufficient for you, Representative?
Probably.
Not here, and we're not moving the bill today. Okay. So we could bring him back when we, if you have questions.
Representative Barreto thankfully provided a copy of the bill to me here. So it says malfeasance, corruption, negligence of duty or other high crime or misdemeanor. I remember we debated what is a high crime. And that whole discussion, I think that comes from English law. I mean, obviously we would debate, you know, malfeasance, corruption, neglect of duty, but at least that sets that's some parameter. It's not just a totally open, I don't like you anymore, so we're gonna.
Is a higher standard than that, yes.
Chair Williamson and Representative Nose, we also, and you can talk with Dexter, but there were a lot of really smart minds at that table, and they also looked at what majority of other states had, and we took into consideration what other states were doing and that played a large role in how this was written.
I bet I voted for the bill last time.
I think you did.
All right.
Yes, Representative Rayfield.
Yeah, I was just going to ask one thing that I, you know, as I was kind of playing this thing out in my head, is when it gets to the Senate on, you know, the impeachment moves over, the bill says senators shall swear or affirm to do justice according to law and evidence. Will the senators then have the ability to subpoena records and kind of go through like a general kind of investigatory process when it gets over there? Is that what that's intended to mean?
Chair Williamson and Vice Chair Rayfield, I believe that you asked that question last time.
No, I never thought someone did.
I think that Dexter addressed that because there was some concern that the senators aren't lawyers, and I believe that we did address that. But I can certainly have Dexter follow back around with you as to how that process would work. That's above my pay grade. I really don't know.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? All right. Thank you, Representative Hack.
Thank you.
Stephen Elzinger. Hi, welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Williamson, members of the committee. My name is Steve Elzinger, and I'm the Governmental and Legal Affairs Director for Secretary of State Dennis Richardson. And Secretary Richardson has a nonpartisan agenda to empower Oregonians and restore public trust through accountability, transparency, and integrity. He believes that accountability should apply to all of Oregon government, including himself. That is why Secretary Richardson supports HGR 10, which would ensure that all statewide elected officials, including the Secretary of State, are fully accountable to the people. It's inexcusable that Oregon is the only state in the country without an impeachment process. Although Oregon is proud to lead the nation as the first to implement a variety of important policies, in this instance, we should follow the best practice of the other 49 states by creating an impeachment process that applies to all statewide elected officials. A well-functioning democracy depends on checks and balances among the three branches of government. Independent legislative oversight of the executive branch is an essential and necessary element of this integrity. Secretary of State Dennis Richardson asked the committee to approve HGR 10 in order to give the people of Oregon an opportunity to create an impeachment process that increases accountability and public trust in our governmental system. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. With that, I will close the public hearing on HGR 10. I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2101. It's Representative Huffman on his way. Why don't we stand at ease while we wait for Representative Huffman? Okay, we are back. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2101. I may have done that already, but
it's fine.
We'll open it again.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2101. Establishes sunset dates for certain public record exemptions, establishes joint legislative committee to review exemptions prior to sunset, requires future exemptions to sunset within 6 years of date of enactment.
Thank you. Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. For the record, John Huffman, State Rep for House District 59. I am hopeful that none of you took the time to read my bill. Because it's not ready. And what do I mean by that? So as I was working with Ledge Council on drafting the bill, which is kind of a product of it, a companion bill to the work group that we had, the task force, the AG's task force on public records. And, you know, we were able to, in a brief window of time of less than a year, agree on some things that we put in a Senate bill that has already had a hearing. There were other things that we started talking about, components of what needed to be done with public records, that we started talking about toward the end of the task force as we were running out of time. So I decided to go ahead and start working with Ledge Council to try to figure out how to approach some of the stuff that I was hearing in the room that people might be able to support. And so as we were working on the process, Suzanne said, so this is a big job. How much time do you want me to spend on it? And I said, well, why don't you just get it to a point where we can get it to session and start having the conversation, which we have been having. I've had numerous meetings the last few weeks around House Bill 2101. And I think there's a lot of support for trying to do something. And so out of those conversations, I thought what I would do is kind of present to the committee what I envision based on those conversations. And it's not going to be exhaustive on the needs that I've heard from partners out there. You know, we have challenges. Mark Landauer was on the Public Records Task Force with me, and he represents small districts. Is he sitting behind me? Because if I'm going to quote him, I need to make sure I get it right if he's behind me. You know, there are rural fire departments. There are small rural school districts. Small rural school districts are really challenging because they're off in the summer, and they may only have a staff of five or less people when they are in school. And so how do they respond to a public records request? So it's not an easy chore to figure all this stuff out. But here's what I envision. An official legislative committee dedicated to public records. Their first order of business would be to work with stakeholders to identify the exemptions that should remain on the exemption list. And there are reasons for that. As I've worked with Lindsay Baker from DAS and the Oregon Department of Justice, the judicial branch, there are definitely exemptions that have federal law, federal requirements. There are a variety of reasons why there are exemptions that we don't want to sunset and have to every so many years go back and rehash them. HIPAA laws and, you know, privilege laws and things like that that we understand and we can all agree that they shouldn't be sunset. The remaining exemptions would be categorized, and Michael Crone?
Yeah, do you want him to come up?
You want to come up, Michael? Come on in. Michael's done, Michael chaired the AG's task force on public records and did a phenomenal amount of pre-work for our Senate bill and also for this. And so I would envision that taking a lot of the work that Michael has done, the database that's been created and will continue evolving, the committee would take this body of work, categorize it, and I know Michael's already done some categorizing, but categorize the exemptions, and every biennium, this committee would rotate through 20% of those if we stick with a 10-year sunsetting rotation. That was just simple math. I was trying to figure out 550 exemptions, how many of them might be kept as permanent exemptions, what would that leave, divide that by, so it was just simple math. So every biennium then they would hold hearings and determine which, very similar to the tax credit, you know, how many of those would we allow to sunset and which ones deserve to be kept. So that's kind of the premise and what my vision is for this. It sounds complicated. I honestly don't think it's that complicated. I think it's something we could get done this session to implement and kick off. I understand that there has been testimony that in another committee that, you know, this is probably not the session for it and we should punt it to another session. The next session we'll say, that's not the right session, we should punt it to another session. I think there's a strong desire for the transparency and the need to clean up. I mean, we are unique as a state with 550 some odd exemptions. You know, we might find out that, darn it, we need all of them. But I kind of doubt that. Some of the other things that I think this legislative committee could work on are the other things that we heard in committee and I've heard since then, out talking to local governments and also people that request public records. And, pardon me, oftentimes it's a question of scope. One sheriff was saying that he struggles with attorneys saying, I need everything surrounding this case. And that's where I think possibly, if need be, last resort could be the ombudsman that we're talking about developing. But so surrounding the ask or the scope. And then on the flip side of that is typically the local government or small government entity, sheriff's office or whatever, you know, they're inundated by these. They don't have the additional personnel to meet that. And so they're going to have to pay overtime and whatever. And a particular sheriff said, so I just told the attorney it was going to be $15,000 for that public records request. Well, it may or may not have been a legitimate answer, response of $15,000. So I think the committee could, if we had a dedicated committee looking at this all the time and the challenges around public records, we could be a much more transparent state and get some of these problems resolved without going to, because I think there's going to be ongoing work with the sunsetting and that type of stuff. So I think it really needs to be a dedicated committee and not just an occasional task force that's formed. And I will shut up there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and thank you for all your work on this. Michael.
Michael Crone from the Attorney General's Office, Chair Williamson, Vice Chairs McLean and Rayfield, members of the committee. So I'm just here to kind of talk a little bit, I guess, about this concept as I had read it in the bill and maybe a little bit as John has explained it more thoroughly, Representative Huffman, rather, has explained it more thoroughly here in committee. You know, I think there is a lot of work to be done, and the Attorney General's task force has been doing quite a lot of work. The spreadsheet that Representative Huffman is referring to runs hundreds of pages in the kind of print you can only read with a magnifying glass. And that's just the text, basically, of all the 550 public records exemptions that have accreted in Oregon law over the 40-some years that we've had a public records law. When the law was originally passed, state law provided 55 exemptions. So we have literally tenfold number of exemptions. That's really the main way in which the law has changed in more than 40 years. And that causes all kinds of problems when you have public records exemptions accreting steadily over time. You have issues of, you know, just a daunting law for public employees to try to implement. It's really impossible to know, like, what are all the exemptions? And some of the exemptions you don't have to worry about because they're not something you can violate, right? They just say, you don't have to give someone who asks for this information the information. But then there are other laws that actually say you can't give them this information. So you want to know that if you're responding to a public records request. And right now it's very difficult to do it. You know, just more fundamentally, I would question whether there really are 550 unique kinds of records that we should be saying to Oregonians, no, you can't see that. And just the work that we've done categorizing and putting like things together suggests to me there really are not. But what we decided in that process was that really we were not the right forum to handle the work. This is a statutory issue. You know, these are 40 years of different legislative assemblies listening to different stakeholders and applying different judgments and principles to those requests and coming out with exemptions that are too voluminous, often inconsistent, you know, in a couple of areas they're just very different depending on what public body you're talking about. So pretty much every public body that licenses someone in Oregon to do something has some ability to investigate their licensees. But how much confidentiality attaches to that process changes drastically from one agency to another. So for attorneys like myself, the process is transparent from the beginning, and I don't feel like we have a bar that is lax in its oversight as a consequence of that. But other professions have a lot of confidentiality during the process, I think there are some administrative reasons why that's useful to an agency. You don't necessarily have the manpower to deal with requests while you're also investigating. And then there's a third category of agencies that have confidentiality that just basically lasts forever. And I'm not sure that those were really well thought out by applying principles to it. So the idea of a committee that could do something like what Representative Huffman is proposing, with exemptions in particular, seems to me extremely useful. A committee that can articulate a set of principles, look at the 550 exemptions we have, figure out how many of them do we really need, what are the purposes they're serving, and then make them consistent among each other so that people can understand what the law means, I think would be a huge, huge service. So that's, we are working in the Attorney General's office and with the task force on compiling exemptions. The Senate bill that Representative Huffman referred to is one that includes a provision that requires the AG to formalize this catalog, add quite a bit more information to it. How has it been interpreted? You know, how is each exemption being actually used, both by the court system and also by the district attorneys and the Attorney General's office, all of whom have some kind of role in reviewing public records decisions. So we are kind of setting in motion a piece of work that I think could be very helpful to the committee. It might be useful to sort of see that work before you really get your there's a saying about a yoke, a shoulder yoke, before you really get shoulder working. Shot. Yes. Thanks. But, you know, I don't necessarily think that means you need to wait to pass the representative's bill. I do think, as written, it has some things that could be changed about it, but it doesn't sound like those really need to be addressed in committee at this time.
Thank you. Questions? Michael, I wonder. Oh, go ahead. Representative Holby.
Sorry, I could have missed this in a previous conversation, but it seems like this kind of process would other body besides the legislature as well. I'm not saying that a legislature shouldn't have this kind of committee, but it seems like also you'd want the law commission to look at these exemptions, you know, from more of a legal aspect to make recommendations on this as well. And they're probably were represented in your task force, I would imagine. But I was just thinking of another venue where people, you know, work with you know, these sorts of legal issues around exemptions a little bit more than the legislature does on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
Just to have that extra input.
Madam Chair and Rep. Holvey, exactly. They were represented on the task force, but, you know, the task force had goals, but, you know, we didn't have a real heavy hammer. I think the legislative committee would have the authority to act on it. But as I've met with the judicial department and the executive branch, you know, I said they would be working directly with this legislative committee because there are legal parameters that you don't want to screw anything up. And the experts out there in the judicial branch and some of the executive branches that know the body of law that directs them to do X service or whatever, they're the ones, the experts, that need to come in and work with the committee and testify. Particularly in the initial group where they would be identifying those, that body of exemptions that really do need to remain exempt. And then after that point, when we have the body that is left for sunsetting, then I can envision any number of people coming before that committee testifying why this exemption should remain in effect and not sunset. Again, very similar, I think, to the tax credit sunsetting concept.
Michael, how far along are you on in the cataloging, and when do you think that will be complete as it stands now before this? If the Senate bill were to pass, it would extend the nature of that cataloging. But as of right now.
So, Chair Williamson, that is a fantastic question. So of the 550 exemptions, 550 plus that we have found so far, A whopping 80 of them are actually found in our public records law. The other 470 are scattered through the 17 volumes of the Oregon Revised Statutes. So I don't, oh, you have a copy of the books right over on that table. So those books, which have paper that is about the thickness of the Bibles I used to thumb through in church when I was a kid, I found 470 in there. I think honestly, it would be very difficult to get to a point where I am 100% confident that we have 100% of the exemptions. One of the things that the Senate bill does to try and address that is require DAs to send us copies of the public records orders they're issuing. So if they're relying on something that's not already in our catalog, we can add to it.
Did we bore Rep. McClain?
Yeah, he's done. Done with this conversation.
Yeah, well, so...
You didn't seem pissed off.
From experience, I will just say that working with this stuff is no fun. It's not fun. And I don't think you'll ever be confident that your catalog is 100% complete. But what I think you will find is that if you have affected stakeholders who find that their exemption is not actually in your catalog, they're going to come forward. So I think in some ways it would be a mistake to think there's an end point of this work that you're waiting for. We have a fairly comprehensive catalog that I put a lot of really tedious time into.
Thank you for that. And we have several bills that include public records exemptions in this body right now. So your work is not done. Representative Rayfield.
Yes, Representative Huffman. I just had a quick question for you. Are you willing to voluntarily serve on this committee for the next 4 to 5 sessions as we dig through these 500 plus sessions? I just want to make sure that we get on the record that your servitude to
Chair Williamson,
the Speaker.
Representative Rayfield, you can't bind the...
I can bind a future legislator.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Michael Friesen and Gary Bauer.
Transparency.
From a Matt. Matt, sorry. I don't know what I was reading. Thank you. Oh, and Rob Bobet. You want to come on up?
All right. Good afternoon, Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Matt Friesen testifying today on behalf of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. A lot of the testimony that I was going to give has kind of been mentioned already. We recognize that this is a work in progress, but that a lot has changed since 1973 when the original law came on the books. And I think one need only flip on the TV or open a newspaper to see that things continue to change at a very fast pace. We're intrigued with the idea of attempting to have a ability to scrutinize better all of the hundreds of exemptions that are currently out there. And believe that public records reform should address the possibility that the rationale for some exemptions have outlived their original merit. And we recognize the language might need additional work, but again, are supportive of the intent. We appreciate Rep. Huffman's efforts to increase transparency and enhance the public dialogue that is represented in this bill, and stand ready to assist and however would be helpful to him or the committee as you guys work this forward. So thank you much.
Thank you. Chair Williamson, members of the committee, I'm Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. We're a natural gas utility. I've been involved in a couple of the requests with the legislature for exemptions. I think the reason that this has become difficult is, yes, it started off small. People thought there was language that might cover their situation, and then something would come along. One of those, for example, was 9/11. We actually thought that, you know, security plans and things like that would be fairly well protected. But we began getting requests from both public agencies as well as the media asking for copies of our security plan so they could kind of let people know whether or not things were secure. And as a result, we ended up in a discussion and a process and eventually some language that kept security plans confidential. We do provide and sit down with the Public Utility Commission on a regular basis. We've now added cybersecurity to those discussions. I think we would have difficulty if we looked and saw that those plan that there was those statutes would automatically be repealed at some point. I'm not sure we'd be as open in sitting down and having that discussion. So I'm not trying, it just strains point out, I think you have a very difficult task ahead of you as you look at those. And I think you'll find that there's probably a lot of other folks who have over the years requested some kind of an exemption that would probably have similar concerns if there's something that automatically repeals that. So just raise that. We're not opposed. I appreciate Representative Huffman's concern. I understand what he's trying for. Just trying to find the exemptions that might apply to us has been difficult. So I totally understand the task ahead. Thank you.
Chair Williamson, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, Legal Counsel, Association of Oregon Counties. I'll just have 2 points. One is I just adopt everything that Representative Huffman said. He said basically everything I was going to say. One thing I will mention to you that I think I mentioned to you during your general hearing a couple weeks ago on public records, it is true that Oregon has 500 and some odd exemptions, and that is not like a lot of other states that have just a few, or even the federal FOIA. But keep in mind this, we have lots of little exemptions. I know how to draft a short list and give you 8 exemptions, but they'll be big. And I suspect many records that are releasable now, public records releasable now, wouldn't be. So I know it's a daunting task to take on, what is it, 559 exemptions, something like that. It's a growing list. I think if you give the assuming the task force continues, if you give us an opportunity, hopefully we can pare down that list and remove from that list those exemptions that really are just pass-throughs, really don't have much discretion. There really isn't any policy decision behind it. Maybe we can pare down that list to something that looks a bit more reasonable, but we'll need some time to do that.
Questions for this panel? Right. Thank you all, and for everybody on the task force, thank you for your work. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2101. Is there any other business for the committee? All right. With that, we're adjourned. Thank you. Thank you. Any other business for the committee? All right. With that, we're adjourned.